You're listening to CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario, radiowaterloo.ca on the web. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of this show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website. I'm your host, Ivan Angelovsky, and if you want to reach out to me, just find me on Twitter. On today's episode, we will be looking into the impact of the whole situation with the COVID-19 on the poor in the Waterloo region. After receiving her social assistance last month, a local advocate for the poor and a single mother of three looked into her bank account last month and found out it was empty. She'll explain it in her own words, just after she tells us something about herself.
I have two tattoos. One says serendipity. So serendipity, essentially, look for the good, find it, run with it. And the other one says bounce. Bounce meaning when you see something good, jump on it. When you fall on your derriere, then jump back up and bounce about it. And when you're enjoying yourself, enjoy it like crazy. My name is Regen Sunshine Bruce. I have a Dutch background, so my first name is actually Rain in Dutch, Regen. And my middle name is Sunshine, as we know. And my background is also French, so Bruce stems from French language being Bruce.
Can you explain sunshine?
My mom was a hippie. With the Alliance Against Poverty, as well as an advocate locally and speaker locally on poverty issues. Having experienced a multitude of poverty-related concerns throughout my life, I then came in contact with the group when I worked at the Regional Collective Office for the federal election in 2015 for the Green Party. And following that, I decided to join them, and they've been helping me develop ways to echo my voice and those of similar circumstance. I wouldn't compare it in the least to what people are going through right now. First off, when I went through those times of my life, I was quite young in one of those times, and this allowed me to have a multitude of services and a lot of compassion and empathy towards my circumstances that we don't always experience or offer to those in similar situations. The second time that I experienced homeless was while I was pregnant with my oldest daughter. And because of my circumstances, again, it was pretty relatively easy to rebound in comparison to the circumstances that others experience and that bring them to the same position. What changed? We have a lot more of it. And the demographics have changed, and our perceptions of why these people are in these positions have become harsher. We're more judgmental as a society, I think. We've become progressively more judgmental, and we choose to decide that, you know, because this person is in these circumstances, it must be because they deserve it. Hi, Sherry.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Anything new?
Oh, lots. We haven't talked in a while.
No.
You know me with my stuff. You've never been around me with my stuff, though. You know how I do the poverty stuff that I do?
Yeah.
I'm working a lot on that right now.
Good for you.
Thank you.
How are the boys? And
hey, they're still climbing. They're still monkeys. I'll keep them for now.
Yeah, have you seen Kim in a while?
I haven't. We touched base a couple weeks ago, but it was a thing of she just stopped in. We didn't really have a chance to because with everything going on in her work, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's keeping the isolation, so.
Yeah.
How are you making out?
Not too bad.
You got everything you need?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have my number?
No.
Can you call Kim and get my number off me?
I sure
okay?
will.
I'm at this end of town, so you need something, let me know, okay?
Okay.
All right. Do you want to talk to this guy about your poverty experience?
Not right now.
That's
thanks.
Cool.
Anyway, see you
all right.
Later.
Take care, Sherry.
I mean, it's all over the place.
It is. It really is. I mean, there's, and it's only going to grow with what we're facing now is the problem. I've been saying for years that the systems that we put in play for our low income in the last few years are what we're going to be looking at relying on for a lot more people now. these systems have been under-supported. They've been poorly recognized. There's been gaps left within them, and we didn't care because it wasn't us. The reality is now it is us. It's all of us. We're all at risk. We all have financial difficulty. Our economy is crashing. And for us to sit there and judge others is something we really have to stop doing if we're actually going to get anywhere on this, because we've really come to a point where we're needing to recognize that we're not all that different. We're really not. I have twin 10-year-old boys, or just below 10. They'll be 10 in September. And I also have a 15-year-old daughter who's currently staying with my mother at my own request. And I'm sending money, or I'm trying to also send money to assist in supporting her, but it's been difficult too because of the situation as well. The remaining funds that I had when GST came in and they took it, every penny that I had left went to my mom to support my daughter, so I was left with nothing.
What actually happened and when?
Let me grab my phone so I get it accurate. Yeah. I'll show you, I don't mind. I don't want pictures online, obviously, but I don't mind showing you to confirm. Okay, so I do Scotiabank. And forgive me, it's just getting me signed in here. Okay, so that's my debt load right now. One of them they've shifted over to the creditors. The total debt load, I believe, is about $24,000. So they're garnishing me for the next $24,000 unless I can figure out something. And then this is the account it goes into. And so what happened was, let me see here. 8th. Okay, so I got the support for families, the two 400s, right? 400 total. And then there was that came out, 271. That was a garnishment. Yeah, and then it was 1,039 that went in for the other one, and they took 1,024. And then back last month, at the end of the month, I made a... well, there's one of my NSFs that got returned. I got charged $48 for my car payment bouncing. I can't see back into last month's, but last month it was my car insurance that bounced. That was $48 plus a penalty by my car insurance company. And then on top of that, that's when I raced. Last month was when I ran, like I watched online for it literally to come in. And then I literally jumped online and made payments to my car to make up for that. And then I literally also went and ran out at 3 a.m. to go to the bank and take out the maximum I could so I'd have grocery money. But the thing is that I have kids at home. I can't juggle that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I shouldn't be having to do that. So, I mean, the thing is honestly, if they could just do debt consolidation so it's one payment, then I can make that payment if it's reasonable. But do the same deferral for me as what's being done for other people of deferring your payments for a few months. Not because just because I don't have a job or didn't have one right before this doesn't mean I don't work. I work in other ways. I'm just not paid for it. And before this, I was a student. I can't go back for my school right now even, so I can't even go finish my diploma to get a job. It leaves me completely in like 6 different gaps, and none of this stemmed from me.
Now, Ms. Brousset is a vigorous advocate for the poor. She is very vocal and very active on social networks. It took her no time to post about her situation on Twitter. That's actually how we found out about it.
Profile. Okay. Profile. So I had tweeted just because saying, you know, you can't do this, you're taking me out of the knees, because they had just taken my CERB funds, the family support one, and the GST credit thing. And I did receive a reply online. You can see it on Twitter on my account. The reply, well, I'll show you if you'd like, and should DM them personally. I did that about a day later. It took me a little bit to get back on it. Just reiterating, you had asked me to reach out personally. They replied once saying, you know, yes, we'd like to help you. What can you tell us about your situation? And in my own standard blunt fashion, I laid out my situation. And I don't remember offhand exactly what I said. I did receive a follow-up, or what I thought was a follow-up phone call today. It was actually from the credit company that they've referred my account to, the creditor. And he essentially confirmed what I've been saying, that there's really nothing to be done about it unless the bank is willing to do something, because right now it's being sent to collections, which is why it's being garnished. I mentioned Laura May Lindo because she's an excellent local rep as well as my riding representative, and I know that she tends to take on situations such as these that form injustice for her citizens and her constituents. She's been quite occupied lately with many other affairs, and I can understand where she hasn't been able to get back to me. I did also mention a few other people, but offhand I couldn't say. I do tend to bring certain issues directly to our politicians when I recognize them to be something that needs to be looked at and addressed. I don't know what I can expect, because technically they are in the right to be doing what they're doing according to our current laws, which is why I was seeking to approach our politicians on this matter. However, what I would love to and appreciate seeing happen would be some debt consolidation for myself despite my non-employment, as well as the same deferrals that many are entitled to at the moment in payment. I'm not expecting that my debt disappear. I'm happy and content to take that on as I have chosen to in creating it. But at the same time, without certain tools being effectuated, this is absolutely going to be traumatic to my family. I am a single mother. I am, in essence, the sole support parent for my children. Such being said, I do qualify for the family benefits, but because I have not been recently employed, I do not qualify for EI nor any of the benefits that are related to employment. In addition to this, I am not able to work right now because my children, like many others, are at home with me, and much of my work has to be done from my home base. Thereby acquiring a job to meet the qualifiers for debt consolidation is not possible per se. So essentially, because of my family makeup, I am not qualified for anything except for the family benefits. This means that I am currently a social assistance recipient living on minimal income, yet I cannot gain any other assistance other than that which the bank has already taken away from me. I don't qualify for CERB because I haven't been employed recently. Instead, I've been a student that had to take a break prior to looking for employment, and not being able to return to school or to gain employment disqualifies me for pretty much every other income. I was on a roll, you know, like I was finally off assistance. I went back to school. I was going to do good for my family. And then now every time I try to take a step in some direction, I get taken out at the knees. And it doesn't work when this is something that's going to happen to a lot more people, not just me. We really start having to look at it as not a situation of an individual, but of our system.
Now, we reached out to Scotiabank, asking them for an interview, and they said they'll look into the matter and get back to us. After a few days, they wrote they were unable to secure us an interview, but they drafted the statement that goes like this. We recognize the financial impact that COVID-19 is having on Canadians. The current economic climate has made it increasingly difficult for many of our customers to pay their bills. And that is why we are working diligently with customers on a case-by-case basis to provide banking services that meet their unique financial needs. We have since resolved this matter to our customers' satisfaction and apologize for any inconvenience they may have experienced. Basically, they are saying they returned the money, so we had to call Ms. Brousset again.
Hello?
Hi, Regan. This is Ivan.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, good. How are you?
I'm feeling good. I was just posting a yay for today note on my Facebook.
So what happened?
I haven't spoken to anybody. Nothing has been consolidated, so as far as I know, it still means that everything will go the same. You know what I mean? Like, nothing's changed in terms of visible, but they did put the money that they took out from the CERB payments back in. So that's about $1,250 or $1,275 or so, actually, which is a huge help, because I'm going to take that and send some to my daughter, pay some on my internet bill, and then the rest I'm going to try to pay off my car so that that bill doesn't keep on creating insufficient funds if this goes on.
Good.
Because I'm only about $2,000 away from paying off my car, so.
So does that cover things you were worried about?
Not in full, because the reality that as I recognize it, at least, because I haven't had the chance to speak to a person at the bank yet, the reality, as I know it to be at this moment, is that the debt still remains and the garnishments might continue. But this does make it that at the moment that, I mean, it's not reconsolidated, so I still won't be able to make the actual payments. But with the small amount of funds being returned, that does help me right now in terms of managing family needs, if you will, which it was a great concern to me.
Now, since Ms. Brousset herself was saying they had the right to take her money, we asked Scotiabank why are they now suddenly returning it and apologizing. They responded the following, quote, "Unfortunately, due to privacy concerns, we are unable to speak to the specifics of individual customers' matters. However, we recognize every customer's financial situation is unique, and we encourage those considering our relief options to visit scotiabank.com or contact us to determine what financial relief measures may best help them meet their immediate needs. To date, Scotiabank has proudly helped hundreds of thousands of customers across Canada manage the financial stress of COVID-19 by offering various relief measures across our products." End quote. So what they're saying is if you're in a difficult situation, call them. But the problem is people on the margin have no idea that they can call the bank, and even if they do, they feel they won't be talking on the same level. Laura May Lindo is Kitchener Centre representative in provincial parliament as a member of the Ontario New Democratic Party. She's actually the one Ms. Brousset mentioned in her initial tweet about the situation.
Many, many moons ago, I actually worked in the finance sector. I used to work at, I worked at TD Bank for a number of years. And my family is actually from the finance sector. They've worked at a number of different banks. This is like who we are as a people. So one of the things that I do know is that financial institutions do have the ability to look at individual cases. My job, though, as a member of provincial parliament, is to always bring it back to the structural issues or the systemic issues that I can actually change in my position as a member of provincial parliament. If I focus on the individual stories, then as much as I may be able to say or do something that will make some that individual feel supported, I think that there's more value in me trying to say, okay, I bet you that she is not the only one who has had this happen. If you were not considered of value and supported prior to COVID, then things got even worse for you, and the programs that were being put in place still didn't take into consideration your circumstance. And so as opposition members, we have been fighting for that. My colleague, Rima Burns McGowan, the MPP for Beaches East York, is also the critic for poverty and homelessness. And she and I are on the phone regularly because we are hearing from folks who don't feel like they're left out of any kind of strategy. And now we're going on 2 months of being left out in a huge crisis, and they are desperate to know who can help them and what programs can be put in place to help them. The government has said, just go to your bank and negotiate and finance to the financial institutions, just be good, right? When it's come to you miss your rent payment, just go talk to your landlord, and landlords, just be good, right? That's not, in my world, that is not leadership when you're trying to do poverty reduction work. Poverty reduction work in positions of power like members of provincial parliament and government officials is putting in emergency legislation that would not allow a landlord to evict you or even threaten to evict you. For many people, they just, in the midst of complete and utter crisis, and with the amount of anxieties that they have piling on top of them in this pandemic, that they're just like, okay, fine, I'm just going to deal with that and, you know, figure it out. They may not advocate for themselves as much, right? They may not come from a place where they've had to advocate for themselves as much as they may have to now. That's a sign of a bigger issue, that we we are in a position, or the government is in a position, where they could ensure that certain things don't happen, or that the financial sector support those that are living in poverty, or impacted by poverty, or as some might say, the working poor, who you don't even realize are struggling, and they could make decisions that demonstrated their care for folks on the margins. But I don't know that they have. I would argue that this particular government has not. While I'm grateful to, in this case, Scotiabank making this decision, I think that there's a lot that we can do from our positions as members, like as elected officials, that would make it more just easier for folks to not have to go and do that kind of advocacy for themselves. A lot of the programs that have been put into place for the crisis already assume that you have resources. There are very few programs that have been put into place that are actually meant to support folks that were struggling prior to COVID. There was a basic income pilot that was actually in place when I was first elected, and the current government decided that they didn't want to finish that pilot, and they didn't want to take the research from that pilot. And even in the small amount of time that pilot was running, it was showing that a lot of folks that were very low income, that were on ODSP, for instance, so their relationship with work is different. They could work, but they would have to have certain things in place in order to make that viable. The basic income was providing them with an opportunity to actually take more control over their life and be less dependent on social systems. And the government took away all of those supports, which made a lot more people more dependent on the social systems. And when this crisis came, then all of a sudden, none of the programs that were being put in place would actually speak to their needs. It's definitely a challenging time, but I have to say it's also an opportunity for us to think about what kind of society we want to be. And as we think about economic recovery and opening up the province, being really honest about who's left behind in all of this, and start to organize continue to organize to make sure that the most vulnerable community members are supported and provided with the love and care that they deserve.
That was Laura May Lindo, Kitchener Centre representative in Provincial Parliament. So, what kind of society do we want to be? What is the level of care the most vulnerable among us deserve? And who's been left behind with the government's COVID-19 help?
People who have the lowest levels of income in our country have not benefited from the federal government responses.
This is Leah Karagata, professor of social policy at Wilfrid Laurier University.
Even though those have been terrific, no complaint about them. They've been fast, they've been good, they've been well managed and well articulated in terms of the way in which they've been delivered. But we're still missing a population that's already struggling. Many of the people that I interview that are part of my research projects don't feel like they're on an equal playing field in terms of calling a bank manager and complaining about service they're receiving, or even knowing that they're, all of the banks have various notices on about kind of reach out if you've kind of got a problem. But it's humiliating to do that, and lots of people will just kind of think, well, gee, I'd be better off to just kind of try to take it out of not my rent money or my food money and suffer through the circumstance. And although there's been discussion at a federal level about whether or not the federal government would intercede with kind of demands that banks lower credit card rates, interest rates, it isn't like the banks have been volunteering to do that. I think on individual cases, they're doing that if people complain. But like the circumstance that you described, I think it's one thing if people complain and then they'll take action and be responsive. But are they doing those kinds of things voluntarily for everybody? I don't think so. demands right now are just huge. I mean, people are just barely coping. And add to that not having enough money usually to just kind of put food on the table, and then trying to think about how you get to the grocery store and all the rest of it, you're probably not even thinking about the fact that a bank might be responsive if you call them, because you're just overwhelmed with the things that are already on your plate. So it's like what we need from banks, and what we need, I would prefer to see it, not a volunteer effort on the part of the banks, but a kind of initiative in terms of the federal government to say that banks need to lower interest rates, that they need to making specific kind of offers to people with credit card and other loan balances, so that people are kind of not having to do the initiation of those things with banks, but the banks are actually doing the reach out, which I think would make a huge difference. It's people of privilege that know to ask, or that feel like they've got the right to ask, and people who are really, really struggling with low income and too much on their plates already are the least likely, in my experience, to make the requests.
What would you like to see?
I'd like to see an automatic increase in Ontario Works payments and in Ontario Disability Support Program payments, or the availability of the CERB benefit to apply to people who are receiving provincial income support payments.
Are you seeing any initiatives to raise awareness about that?
I think people have tried to kind of make that claim to the provincial government, but I certainly haven't seen any response.
Kind of have to give credit where credit is due. This bank returned the money to.
Sure, that was terrific, and I think they're to be applauded for doing that. But what would be really lovely is to see them reaching out to other clients who I'm sure the simplest database program would establish for them which clients are behind in their payments, to be reaching out specifically to those clients to say, what do you need from us, rather than it being having to be initiated by the client themselves that's in trouble. I mean, obviously, should we have had some kind of guaranteed annual income, the kind of pilot project that Doug Ford canceled when he got into power, we wouldn't be needing now to be rolling out all of these special initiatives, because we would have had programs in place. And I think countries that already had those kinds of programs in place are recognizing that, wow, if we had some kind of guaranteed annual income that can be adjusted at tax time, so that if it's me getting it, I don't get the benefit of it, because at tax time it gets clawed back, we don't need to put in place all of these initiatives.
What is this pandemics?
When it's over?
When it's over. Where is going to leave the low-income people?
Well, I think people will have amassed more debt, and people will have amassed stress, huge amounts of stress, and we'll see more people with kind of high levels of food insecurity, and we know the effects of that on kids. And for single parents who are on various kinds of income support programs, their ability to kind of manage homeschooling and kind of all of the other childcare responsibilities that they have effectively will be less than middle class people who have many, many more resources. And the impact on their kids will play out in not positive ways, to put it that way.
That was Leah Caragetta, professor of social policy at Wilfrid Laurier University. You've been listening to the CKMS Newsroom at 102.7 FM. Check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo, and you can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover. The music was Black Room by Moby, courtesy of mobygratis.com. My name is Ivan Angelovski, and I was your host for this program.